Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Winter Federal.
Swammerheist.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shekels.
Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Tribe.
Scheibe Tortelle.
Ship.
Tribe.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor 42 for Survivor Global. I'm your host Shannon Guss, here to talk about episode 4, an episode that was definitely a little bit more standard than last week, that maybe seemed a bit more mundane, but that I actually really enjoyed and really appreciated a lot of the strategy happening on the rewatch, so I'm excited to talk about it. And I have a great guest, someone who is a super fan, someone who is a Survivor player who was tragically robbed from the game, but we get them here, so that is the good part of that. Please welcome the great Phil Ferguson. Phil, thank you for being here.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I finally get to talk about Survivor to someone.
No, I'm excited to have you because, okay, so hopefully our listeners watch Australian Survivor, but like not to, you know, we don't want to go on about the point, but there was a horrible twist in episode 1. It sent you out of the game. It was a huge robbery. We shouldn't talk about it more, but I'm glad that we got an episode that wasn't about like huge twists, because I remember we were watching some of episodes together last season and one of them was like the hourglass episode. And I'm like, no more horrible twists when we're around you because it's just too triggering.
Oh, literally, because like we watched two episodes as a group together, and one was the hourglass episode.
And the do or die, yeah.
And then the do or die. Yeah. It was just like, oh, so, and even last week, I felt a little bit of like, a little bit stressed, just like the intensity of what was happening. And I was like, and then Jenny left, and then everybody was like really sad that Jenny left and posting. And I was like, oh, God, this is like way too, it's giving me a bit of PTSD. So, very nice to have a even episode where things happen and we can actually talk about it without wrenches thrown into the mix.
Yeah, other than Drea's like extra vote coming out and not even the extra vote, like it was about Tori spilling the extra vote. It was like some hardcore old school strategy, if anything, and just like really relationships and bonds and lies and numbers. So that's what's fun. And we didn't manifest any like crazy twist by having you here, which is great. But Phil, you've not been on RHAP before. And I was also robbed of getting an exit interview with you. I'm getting angry now about what happened like 8 months ago. But yeah.
That was because we were in lockdown as well. Like, I could not have asked for such little anything from my sort of like pre-survivor, post-survivor experience. It was just everything was in lockdown. I had my one episode, couldn't even watch it with my friends, got like no exit press. Like, it was like, cool, that just happened.
Yeah, exactly. Terrible.
But I will say, the fans were so nice that it did fully eclipse like that part of the experience. So I do appreciate that everybody was so nice on Twitter and on Reddit and all the things. Like that's such a nice thing
about
it. Yeah.
Rarity as well. Mm-hmm. So we should appreciate that when it's able to happen. But Phil, having not been on RHAP before, tell the listeners, how have you been? What have you been up to? You're always on Instagram creating like the most fantastic creations.
Thank you.
So yeah, tell the listeners about it all.
Oh well, I don't know. It's so funny because well, right now, Melbourne's weather has finally turned into Melbourne weather. We actually had such a nice little summer for the first time in like 2 years or whatever, because we've spent the last two in lockdown and then we had the bushfires and stuff like that. So I had a very nice summer. But it's actually just really funny because I was just in Adelaide. I've had a bit of a weird creative sort of like stifling moment. And I went to Adelaide a few weeks ago and I got to finally get to hang out with anybody from my season. So I finally got to see Hayley. And got to see some of my other friends, and it kind of reignited my creative spirit. And so, yeah, now I'm just like spent the last few weeks sort of making and painting. I've never painted so much in my life, and crocheting, and yeah, just uploading all my stuff on Instagram, and you know, finally feeling like a good little artist after a few years of lockdown and living in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm. I was feeling we got a lot of like great fashion moments through this season. People were talking about like Romeo's sweater, jumper. I mean, nothing compares to the hat, but I feel like there would be some people who could pull off some of those creations on the season.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was like thinking about it. I was thinking about it when our season was airing, and even just the other day when I think it was like Romeo's weird galaxy jumper that was making me think about it.
Yeah.
But or even Omar's emu shirt. But like, if any of my friends went back, I would totally offer to like make them something so they could wear it. Like, especially a hat. Like, especially on Australian Survivor, like, you get given so many clothes. And so, you know, if somebody I knew was going to go back, I'd be like, yeah, I'd just crochet you like a nice sun hat and you could actually use it. And they probably would let you wear it, especially if I made it. Like,
So, yeah. Do I have to go on Survivor to get a sun hat? I want a sun hat.
I'll just make you one. Like, that's the thing. It's like, if I always make things for friends. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just a nice little gift and it's a nice little thing to do for someone. And so, yeah, oh, I'd make you something.
Well, now I feel bad. Like, in my position of power on this podcast with the listeners, you know, listening, and I'm like, can I have something? Can you make me something? I don't want to pay for it, but I want it.
No, yeah, yeah. It's like, the next minute, all my Twitter is just, like, people saying, hey, you just said you'd, like, make your friends things. Why can't I have something?
Yeah.
Great.
Can you make all of the listeners something? That's what I know. Pay for the products. That's what we, yeah. I'll pay. Well, it's fine.
Don't
worry about it.
No, don't stress. No paying for you. Shannon.
Phil, I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on the season at large? Because I personally have been loving it. What are your thoughts?
I want to personally thank this cast for getting me back into watching Survivor after being on it properly. Like, I was thinking about it the other day. Like, when I was watching our season, I think the fun of watching it, especially we were in lockdown, we had nothing else better to do. And I watched South Africa as well when we were in lockdown. So I don't know. I think I just sort of was really invested in my own season because everybody sort of, I was invested in my friends essentially and seeing what happens and how they were portrayed and all this sort of stuff. But then when we were watching 41 and then Blood versus Water, I think it still was a bit too soon for me to sort of be watching it because I think, especially with 41, everybody was very serious. I can't remember which podcast I listened to the other day. I can't remember if it was Rob's or if it was you, but somebody mentioned that, you know, the 41 cast were quite serious and they weren't as fun. And I find that this season 42 cast is so much more fun. Everybody's so different, which I think was something everybody pointed out when we saw the cast, was that there wasn't very many of the same archetype. It was very like everyday people as opposed to like five fit men and like five fit women and then the others. And so I feel like because of that sort of fun spirit, it's really, and like you just mentioned before, this episode was so old school that it really sort of took me back into what I loved about it. So it coming from my experience, like, it's just so nice to be able to like come back into it and it be sort of the Survivor that I loved previously, basically. I don't know. It just has a good spirit, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, this season has a lot of the things that I enjoy and love about Survivor. Like, it has characters you want to hang out with. I think that's really essential. Like, you know, turn on the TV on a Thursday night and I'm like keen to see what's up. Hang out with Marianne, you know, hang out with a lot of these different players, which I think is essential and has always been the most essential thing about wanting to watch the show. Then it has like fun meta editing, which is like a big part of the new era, which really works for me as someone who loves like Community and like the messiness of TV and self-referentialism, like having Romeo narrate his own montage. That works for me. The funny stuff coming back with like Swathi's number ones. I really enjoy that. And strategically, I mean, last episode was kind of like in a league of its own in terms of like the negotiation of it all and the strategy around all of that. But even this episode, I was realizing what I really enjoy is looking at the intricate strategies of these small tribes. And we did it a lot last season too, but when they're in these tribes of what start as six, the votes will become so imperative and everyone's decisions become like each individual viewpoint becomes like, I feel magnified because they all have that much more power. And just like looking at the strategy of this episode, I think it was kind of shown to us, and definitely in the first time I watched it, was like kind of the simple decision between, okay, like, is Tori, like, in her transparent chaos, is that worse than Swathi's kind of like quiet chaos and she's doing things more behind the scenes? And that's definitely a decision we'll talk about. Like, that's like the primary decision. But there's more to it than that. There's the fact that Romeo and Dre, I think particularly, are making moves to kind of structure this hierarchy so that if this group of six gets down to two, which they still technically could if they merge at like 11 and they go back to the tribal councils and, you know, the tribes have been losing. Anything's possible. Like, any tribe can do that, probably, other than Taku. But if that's the case, then how will they be the last two? And it's something that we looked at a lot last season. Like, how did Shan and Rakar become the last two?
Yes.
How was every structuring thing to be at the center to be at the last two, which is something I gave every praise for last season. Was Deshaun going to be in the center of that? If Luva went to tribal council, how do you kind of structure this hierarchy in a really strategic way? And I think Romeo and Drea were kind of underrated in how good they were in this episode, in not just kind of making a good decision, but really putting themselves at the top of the structure. So I want to talk through all those decisions, but I kind of live for that strategy. Like, it's not about advantages and twists, as we're saying, but it really is about, like, relationships, seeing through certain lies and stories, and then, like, okay, well, how can I get the numbers to work best for me?
Yes, that's the thing about what I loved about Survivor, like the whole 20 plus years now of it, is that sort of navigating the sort of social structures that develop in the scenario you're handed. And when it's a tribe of six, it's so small. Like, it's so small that you really do have to be in tune with what each of the other five people want as their priorities, and playing alongside that and going against them. Which is just so funny because, like, you know, especially with the other two tribes, the dynamics are so radically different. You have a group of four on Vati who are like, we're four strong and we're all together. And it's like, okay. I mean, on Taku, yes. And then Vati's green, yes. And then, you know, you have the Vati group who are, you know, high and Liddy. Like, they split almost down the middle. And now that's a weird sort of swinging pendulum of a group of people. And then you have this group where you have two people who are at the top and everybody's trying to climb up to sort of meet them. And it's so, yeah, it's just really interesting to sort of see how all of that is playing out with these groups. And that is kind of what I like about Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, like, the big groups can be interesting too, and I've often said that, like, Australian Survivor scene, like, can feel like two concurrent mergers, and it depends. Like, I feel like what you don't want, what can be kind of a bit boring, is like these big groups. We did see a lot of it this season of Australian Survivor, like big groups kind of picking off people on the bottom, where it doesn't really matter necessarily who goes home, because you're going to be like this big kind of monolith group, and one of the however many people on the bottom are going doesn't hugely matter who. Maybe it's like a personality thing. It is really interesting when these big groups can get to like a 7-5, and when now we're like really at like two opposing factions as if we're at a merge. But for something like this in small groups, it's so individual, where it's not going to be the two factions, but then it also can't be, okay, well, we're just going to take out whoever. It doesn't really matter. Like, every vote matters so much, and every relationship matters so much, like every individual relationship of everyone on the tribe. So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's really strategically interesting. And if you look at the other tribes, like Taku, for example, they're probably more of what you want going into a merge. I mean, other than the target, but for their internal relationships, you want, even maybe more so, like Marianne kind of feels on the bottom, you want it to be like, what was the hierarchy? I don't know. Was that strong? Like, obviously, you want to come in with the strongest, most even group. But the nature of trying to survive through these difficult pre-mergers and without a swap, what these last two seasons have shown, is that to survive, you have to kind of be naturally divisive and hierarchical, right? Like, and you have to kind of have people separate. You have to control relationships. Like, you don't want to be one big happy family. You want to be a hierarchy that you're at the top of, because if you keep going to tribal council, you're going to win out. So it's interesting, because it's not what you wanted to merge, and it might fall apart. And yes, I do fall apart. And I do think that's something that, like, Evie was approaching, and I agree with that decision, and there were other things going on, but maybe that was a part of it. So I think it's an interesting thing about wanting to go in as one big happy family versus needing to go in as a hierarchy, which is easier to break because it's been like more maybe acrimonious or more divisive in that pre-merge.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because like it's just one of those things where because the group's going into the merge, and we are all going with the assumption that they're just going to repeat and they're going to enter as groups. I mean, the tribes of three are going to merge. There's no...
There's a double episode in 2 weeks. So it's looking like that'll be the merge. So looking like they won't have swapped again, because this is just season 41, the sequel.
Yeah.
So that's
what because I guess like this scenario, obviously, and then last season, and what was the only other time they did it in this, like as in three to the merge? Millennials versus Gen X.
Yeah, well, Millennials versus Gen X started as two and then went to three.
And
the last season, I think, was the first time that we've had three going in that three to the merge without it having been like a 2-3 swap and then the merge, which they've done before.
Yeah, because it's like one of those things where, yes, navigate everything within your groups, but then, yeah, if you're entering the merge, you're almost every single group will be a minority of some capacity. Obviously, you could be, what, Luvu last season and just be a group of six.
Mm.
But
you're not going to have a majority.
Yeah, you're not a majority. Like, all the other people can just go together. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it is sort of interesting to see how these groups specifically are sort of approaching it, having seen how another lot of people in the same scenario have sort of played it out. It's just crazy how different they are. Actually, quite
different. Yeah, I mean, definitely we'll talk about it. And I have, like, worries for Taku because they are, like, the closest group. And these other groups, Vati and Eco, are just, like, such hot messes.
Yeah.
But I still was really impressed with Romeo and Drea in this episode, which we'll talk about. Before we get there, a couple of other things. So we should talk about Potato Gate, which I'm calling Potato because I like to make words into different words. And that's just what I do for some reason. So talking about Pegato, so we talked about in the first episode where at the beginning, in the first 42 seconds, it showed Tori saying the third beware phrase, potatoes have skin, I have skin, am I a potato? Which is very much the butterfly meme, as I've worked out now. And that ruined it for me because I assumed that was Tori saying it, and Tori was one of the options to go home against Zach, and it made sense that she wouldn't go home and that Zach shot in the dark wouldn't hit. And that's what happened. So I don't know if it, like, you know, in the subsequent days, it's like, was that true? I don't know. Anyway, it spoiled my enjoyment that episode. Then it was like, well, maybe that wasn't her. Maybe it's someone else finding the beware advantage. Maybe it's someone like Lindsay, because it kind of sounds like that, on another tribe. And I was like, all right, well, maybe it wasn't Tori. But then the other tribes found their beware advantage, and it was Marianne and it was Mike, and it's clearly not them saying it. And they have their own phrases. So I went back to being like, Tori must be the one who finds it. So then when she was the other option in this episode, you know, it spoiled my enjoyment, my dream party's enjoyment of the episode. Since then, there are other theories. Is it someone in post-production? Like, maybe it's not Tori. So if it happens again, I'm ready to be open-minded. But, like, just by the way that my thought process were going in those two episodes, it did ruin it for me. And I am annoyed about it. And whether it was like a red herring that's trolling me or I'm actually spoiled, I actually can't work out which one would irritate me more. But it seems to have affected a lot of people's enjoyment. So it happened. I know there's a lot of like, well, who remembers that? Me, clearly me. Like, who's paying attention to that? I am, obviously. Yeah. You know, like, and a lot of people seem to be. So it's a really annoying thing that production decided to do for someone who was going to be the decoy or be the second option two times. We're going to have to move forward. I enjoyed it a lot more on the rewatch when that, like, annoyance was gone. And I just wanted to pay voice to it because I do know that, you know, like, anti-potato people rise. We're a movement. Gato, it's real, but, like, we're going to have to move forward through the rest of the episode.
So I re-watched a video. I don't know what it was on, but it was, like, the clip of the Pegato. I'm calling it the Pegato. I don't think I'm saying that right. But it literally sounded as if, because then people were pointing out that in the original version of it, that it was Marianne saying.
Okay, because because the Beware Advantage has all three phrases so that you know when to respond. So it's her saying. So that makes it feel like maybe it's a red herring.
Because when I listened to the new version, it just sounded like generic person voice. It was like, my skin's like potato. Am I a potato? Or whatever it was. And I was like, this does not sound like somebody who's out there. Like, because we've heard a lot of Tori talking, but it could be literally any, like, it's just a voice. Like, it had no extra part. But it's sort of funny. It reminds me of, you don't watch Drag Race, hey?
No.
So one of the things that Drag Race does, they used to do it really prominently in the early seasons, and then they have done it less over the years because the fans are so rabid that they basically, it's like thousands of Shannons, like, analysing this teaser at the beginning of the, like, everybody at the beginning of the season, because they do, like, this is what's going to happen on the season and all this sort of stuff. And so much happens in Drag Race, you know, there's different challenges, there's different runways. And so the fans see this teaser and they deconstruct, like, all the runways, and then they make, like, a graph. They make a graph of this is this week's runway. Like, this,
I love
all
that.
Of these looks align with the blue runway, and then all of these looks are aligned with the fur on your head runway. And so then they, through that, then deconstruct who doesn't make it to certain points because the show does this big super teaser. And so it's just really interesting to sort of see a survivor variation of it because while they didn't necessarily spoil placement via, like, they are clearly doing a challenge at this point in time, they've inferred somebody surviving a long enough period of time via playing that voice clip. Whoever voice's clip is over a shot of Tori and, you know, it could be a red herring. Like, they could be smart and just be like, we're going to make you think it's Tori.
But why?
But it's actually, I don't know. I have no idea. Like, I don't know why they had the twist that sent me home. Like, I don't know what they were hoping from that. I have no idea, but they sometimes just do things to play with us.
They sometimes do the wrong thing.
Because they know. Yeah, but, well, it's just so funny because it's like when we all go on Twitter and we all like post like Gator, like hashtag the Gator.
Well, I don't think anyone's saying the Gator, but like well, now I'm moving to make it a thing. Yeah, like now hashtag
I'll encourage it.
Yeah,
like when we're all talking hashtag the Gator, you know, that's drumming up the interest. So if they are inserting in very sly ways this sort of level of intrigue that for the Facebook fans at home who really did, they probably don't even know who Tori is. They're probably all still commenting, like, who's Tori? But us, the people who are on social media and really posting all the time, we probably will be sort of be like, about it. And that's what they want. So, like, it sucks in terms of, like, our viewing experiences. But, you know, it's definitely for people who aren't us. And unfortunately, our brains just don't. Because, like, you know, we all read the edit. We all understand that we're getting shown certain things for particular reasons, and now we're trying to deconstruct what we see for it to make sense. But unfortunately, this stupid thing was like the very first 45 seconds of the first episode. Yeah. And so unfortunately, we don't know. We weren't to know how to understand that information as time has gone on because, like, it hasn't played out in that way yet. And so it's just sort of a bit weird.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely spoken about, like, them trying to feed the anger machine for ratings, more for Australian Survivor and, like, being an unwilling participant in that because I do that and I tweet angrily about it and then I come on the podcast and, like, talk about, for example, like, your twist, for example, and that they like that in the traction. I think Australian Survivor does that more and actually think that this was part of what they were trying to do. Like, I just think that they didn't anticipate that people would be making, like, conspiracy theory videos about, like, this one tiny little scene. Like, I think this was more maybe an accident. They led us in that direction. I think they just maybe wanted to give the potato quote. Maybe that was the funniest quote to give, and they didn't think that we would really take from that. But they definitely like trying to indicate that it's Tori. Like, whether it's her or not, like, I saw someone comment saying that they were watching, like, with closed captions, it said Tori. It has her face. Like, that's clearly what they're trying to make us think, whether it's her or not. Yes. And to have, like, two options of her going, that's a bit upsetting. Like, I watched The Bachelor, and The Bachelor always has, like, next time on, like, most of it is, and they'll do previews, and I only, like, learn the names, like, in the last, like, third of the show. So for me, I don't care. I wouldn't care if I was spoiled on The Bachelor. And I know that they do that, too. Like, they had, like, the rose ceremony from hell, and then afterwards I saw a tweet that was, like, everyone who was shown, it was only two people, and it was, like, everyone who was shown being in that rose ceremony, and there was, like, 10 different people. Like, they cut it up and they edited it as well. But for The Bachelor, I don't care. I just wouldn't expect it from Survivor. And on Survivor, I really, really do care. So I'm one of the people that was affected by it. I'm going to take it with a grain of salt and assume that it was a post-production person from now on. But, like, definitely Pegato. Pegato moves on.
Can we have a Pegato party if it doesn't, like, pan out that way? It's like the biggest sigh of relief. Like, if Drea loads up on these advantages and finds this thing, we could actually be like, you.
What if no one finds it?
Imagine.
But I'd be more mad if I was trolled. That's the thing. It's like, I'd be like, but why did you make me think, like, it did take, like, that's the thing. It's like, it did take away from my enjoyment in those 15 minutes of each episode. Like, nothing can take that back. You know, like, it did happen. It's not like, I wasn't spoiled. It's like, no, in the moment, I felt spoiled. Like, and they both played out. And, like, it was particularly unfortunate because when you have shot in the dark, like, the reason it's great is because at the very least, you should think, like, there's no sure thing because anyone has a shot in the dark. Yes. Anyone could play it and any time it could hit. But both times, I'm like, I bet this isn't going to hit because I feel like Tori's going to stay around. And then, like, whether that ends up being true or not, it's what I felt in the moment, and it proved right at that time.
Yeah.
So to, like, anti-spoil me in the future won't bring that time back. So that's what I'm trying to say about it. So It's a painful thing. I mean, look, I didn't pay any attention to it in the preview from season 41. Like, yeah. That, like, those are just voices and faces. Like, that's no one to me. But, like, in the first 43 seconds, at that point, like, I've listened to all the preseason content. I've done a draft. Like, I know who Tori is. When I see it, I'm like, oh, that's Tori finding it. Like, that has meaning for me. Other people were spoiled even more so from things that were actively shown, like Omar and Marianne finding the Beware in episode 3. That actively spoiled them because it hadn't happened yet. That Marianne, the other person, the other possible target in episode 2, wasn't going to go home, and that was legit. So it's definitely something they would do in a legitimate way because they did it for Marianne. So I don't want to go on too much about it because I love the episode and Pegado was like my only note. But I don't know, at this point, we're just talking about it because it's true, all TV franchises do it. The Bachelor does it, Drag Race does it. Maybe they should find other ways to market things that isn't spoiling their own show. Yes. That's just a suggestion from me.
Just slow-mo shots of them walking through a forest is fine.
Yeah, just like a dark background and being like, it's going to be good, just trust us. I don't know, there has to be a way to market it without it. Another thing I wanted to quickly touch on before we get to all the cool strategy was, like, so Swathi mentioning Boston Rob at the end of the episode. So she says, like, Boston Rob was fourth out. Firstly, like, there's even, like, a question, like, is she fourth out? Because she's actually, like, fifth. She's fourth bid, but she's fifth out. Anyway, there's been questions on that. Anyway, so then she says, then, like, he came back to win, which he did, an all-star season, which he didn't, and he also wasn't fourth out. So there's, like, 2.5-ish things wrong.
Yes.
I felt bad for Swathi because, like, it's clearly a tough moment. She misspoke. We've all done it. I've listened back on podcasts and been like, what are you talking about? It's called a brain typo. That's what I call it. She misspoke. I just feel so bad about it because immediately Twitter, because we're all so annoying, are like, that's just not right, Swathi.
I felt bad because I was on Twitter when the episode was airing, but before we could see it. So I was like, oh my God, like, what did she say? Like, and then everybody was quoting it. And I was like, wow, she must have said this with so much confidence or certainty or whatever. Like, she must have, like, everybody's so piling on this poor girl. And then I watched the episode, and especially leading up to the moments of her getting voted out, I was like, oh, like, you're such a sweet girl. You're, like, shine. Like, this is really... And then when she said it so earnestly, and I was like, oh... No, like, everybody's really just like, but it's just really funny because also, like, she said it. I think the thing that probably is the more, she said the wrong thing and all that sort of stuff, but I think the thing that probably does agitate everybody is that she said it in application to herself. So as if she's going to be coming for an all-star season and winning despite being fourth out. Like, I think that's the little niggly part about it. Because it's like, oh, you think Rob did it? Well, you didn't even say the right quote. Like, so but I did feel really bad for her when she, because then, she seems so sweet. Like, I really felt for her. I could see because when I got voted out, I was so upset. Like, the producers gave me a hug. They were like, take a deep breath in. Like, they were so like, oh my God, this thing happened to you. Like, they seemed as upset when I left as I was. And so I was a bit like in shock. And so they're like, no, take a deep breath in, just like smile and then like do your little post interview thing. But I remember being in the moment just being like, and so, no fault of her own. She was clearly a bit stunned. She was expecting it, but not expecting it. She, I don't know. For somebody very sweet, I'm sure, you know, an intense situation like that would probably be very confronting. And so, she said the wrong thing, but also, like, I don't know. Because how funny is it that she was born, like...
Yeah, so there's stats. I want to give these stats to the listeners. So she was actually born on the night of the fourth boot of Marquesas, which was not Boston Rob, it was Sarah Jones. But what's incredible about that is it means that, assuming she was born... at any time before Sarah Jones was voted out, probably around 9 o'clock, Boston Rob was the fourth boot that she saw, being the seventh boot. She saw 4, 5, 6, 7. So that's actually kind of incredible. There's so much symmetry around that that is just poetic. Like, that makes it all amazing to me.
Yeah. Oh, I love those sorts of coincidences. Like,
that, well, maybe it's not a coincidence. Maybe, like, she's like, I feel strongly about the fourth boot of Marquesas. I don't know why. Maybe it's someone big like Boston Rob. Like, no, Swathi, it's the day you were born. It's your, like, birthright.
Oh, yeah. It's like how I really loved Francesca. And then I was like, wow, my favorite this season is Francesca. And then she gets voted out. And then maybe I was meant to be the Francesca of my own season.
Well, don't jump that out in the universe, because that's not happening the second time.
Let's hope that that doesn't happen twice. But do you know what? If I was going to be like the Tony equivalent to Sandra of Francesca, like, I'll take that. But it's all about, she's manifesting. Do you know what? Good on her. She's manifesting something.
Something was going on with that. Like, well, so a couple of things on this. She said on Twitter that she met Rob Cesenino, who, you know, we're all on his podcast platform right now, so we appreciate it. I feel like the thing she said actually apply less to Rob Cesenino than Boston Rob. Like, firstly, he doesn't go on to win. Like, at least Boston Rob goes on to win a season, not an all-star season. She also said he was first out on his first time. Rob Cesenino was first out on his second time, so it's even not legit. Rob particularly was the third boot and the fourth out. She's the fourth boot and the fifth out because of Jackson and Jen Maraska leaving. Robsy fits less than Boston Rob. Like, that makes less sense to me. Like, she should have said, like, I'm fifth out like Kelly Wentworth, and maybe I'll go on to be like a legend of the show. Like, there were other examples there for her for sure. But not Boston Rob. And I truly don't believe Rob Cesenino either.
Oh no, yeah, that was, I did see that sort of like clarification. I was like, yeah, that really, especially because the first time Rob did quite well. Like, Rob is like best person to never win.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, it, and then Rob very much was like the person on the outs and got voted out the second time. So also it doesn't make any sense at all.
No, but that one's worse because she's also saying it now. Like, at the, like, for sure, like, I feel like at the time being voted out, like, brain typo for sure. But like, this is like months later, you're saying it on Twitter. Like, you've had the time to work out that, like, it wasn't Rob Cesenino either. Like, Boston Rob has a lot of fours. He played in season four. He won in his fourth time. He was in fourth boot, but I get, like, you were born that night. Things were happening in your mind, whatever. It's fine. Like, it's all good. But, like, why on Twitter are you saying it was Rob C? That makes less sense. Like, that's, like, the more egregious offense to me.
You were literally 0 years old when this whole season played out.
Like, that's believable.
I don't know. Especially, I can imagine that she's probably getting spammed so hard from that one night that she was like, shit, recover.
Recover with, like, Kelly Wentworth. It's fine. Just move on.
Yeah, literally say anyone. Any pre-merge person, like, literally, say you're Brad Culpepper. Like, say anyone. Say you're Monica. Say you're Monica Culpepper. Like, you're a neat lady.
Well, maybe you don't go full Culpepper. Like, there's a lot of good options that she could have gone with. But, okay, so she screwed up. It's fine. It's fine. We don't blame her. The Twitter stuff is weird. We move on. But the important thing, and this is what's imperative about this, is the show left it in. Now, they talked for minutes. They did not need to include that. So it's one of two things, and I want to get your take on it.
Yes.
Did they want to embarrass her for some reason, this poor, nice 19-year-old girl?
Yes.
Or did they not know that? Does the show not know that Boston Rob was not fourth boot and then didn't go on to win an all-star season? Or maybe they think the all-star thing, like, I don't know, he never got to the end and then he wins the season. That's much of a muchness. But the fourth boot, did the show not verify, or did they want to embarrass her? What do you think?
I think it's a weird combo of all of it. So, like, yes, they buried her the whole entire episode. I was like, whoa, I can't remember the last time. So it was like, yeah, she's doing bad. Well, actually, the last episode was, actually, what am I saying? Literally, last episode was somebody doing bad. And it was very much
channeled it well.
Yeah, literally. But it was like, they didn't, because I love this, like, meta, like, I know you don't love Drag Race, but if anybody loves Drag Race, there's this clip from season two of Untucked. And you know what Untucked is?
No.
Untucked is basically when the judges deliberate, the queens go backstage, and it's like a mini sort of episode where they talk about what happened, blah, 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 blah. But there's an episode where there's this drag queen, Raven, and there's this drag queen, Tatiana. And the whole season they've been butting heads the whole time. And there's this moment where Tatiana's like, you guys all think that I'm like shit. And then it cuts to Raven saying, I would never say that. And then they basically do what they do to Swathi, and they play Raven saying, her runway was shit, her book cover was shit, the way she was selling it to the judges was shit, she's shit. And then cut back to it, I would never say that. And it was like another version of that playing in front of my eyes with, like, Oh, yeah, she said that to me, too. She said that to me, too. So I have a feeling that they, yes, they wanted to include that because it lends itself to the narrative. But I also think that the big thing with that is I think they're manifesting her to be a potential whatever. Like, with anybody, like, they wouldn't include somebody saying, I'm going to return, like, no, unless they really want people to think, oh, maybe she'll return. Like, if they don't want you to return, they'll just, like, fully bury you. I don't know. I feel like there's a bit of that. Because she's so young as well. Like, she has an inbuilt narrative of she was this shy girl the first time, but now she's, what, 21 as opposed to 19 or however. She's 19, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, that, yeah, that gives her, like, 60 years to come back at a point. So you want to keep the door open. But I feel like, assuming someone could play at the age of 80, I don't know. Anyone could be well, but I think
it's like 60 years.
Yeah, I don't know. But okay, fine. Maybe 45 years where she could technically return. So they're keeping the door open for her. But like, I don't think that was, I mean, I firstly believe that the show thought this was the correct fact and didn't verify. Like, I really believe that to be true. The other thing is, I think that it's part of like what they are enjoying about the new era, which is like, all these people were such big fans. Look at Swathi. She's quoting something from the night she was born, which actually would have been a better quote. Like, oh my God, I was, well, she wasn't even a fourth boot. I don't know. There wasn't a lot there for Swathi, but like, I think they like Zach coming in and giving the line.
Yeah,
they like
these
young, new generations of super fans. They definitely like that she's mentioning Boston Rob of all people. And they're like, this is the culture of like the super fandom of the show. I don't know that Amish will definitely come back or that they're thinking about it. And I also think that they just were like, yeah, that's a good fact, Swathi. Thank you for that. And they just put it in and never, like, check the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, actually, do you know what? So I've always had this theory since my season and then the Paramount Plus stuff happened and, you know, all the seasons were on that. And then now they're doing the CBS challenge, specifically, like, CBS's version of the challenge. But I seriously think that they are instilling this like Survivor cinematic universe sort of idea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sandra coming on AU and, you know, all this sort of like meta-ness about the show because they want, you know, they probably do want somebody to watch this current season and go, shit, maybe I should go. Sorry, I keep swearing. I should go back and watch, you know, Marquesas or whatever season Rob was supposedly.
And then you can verify yourself.
Yes, you can literally. What's the Wikipedia when you can watch on Paramount Plus all five seasons that feature Rob? Or wait, it's five seasons, right? Yeah, like all these seasons, six seasons of Rob, like.
Yeah, with Island of the Idols.
Yeah. So I maybe, you know what, maybe it's a combination of all of the things we just said, but I really think they want as much meta-ness as possible now, so people are encouraged to watch back.
Yeah, so that's probably what it was, but they just had to, like, you know, bury Swathi in the process of getting people to watch Marquesas. So for the new Marquesas viewers, they're going to get a rude awakening when Boston Rob lives through that fourth boot. So, yeah.
America. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
But I wanted to talk about Ika because I do really feel like not enough good stuff has been said about Romeo and Drea, who are two of five people in a tribe against three people that I think absolutely should go against them two specifically because they're three people that have been targeted by Romeo and Drea. They've obviously been going for Tori. They vote out Swathi here. Drea's been going for Roxroy. There's definitely that divide. And instead, because of some of that internal conflict of the three and because of Romeo and Drea, they really keep that at bay, come back with, I think, full power. They still have the extra vote. They come back with, like, Roxroy and Tori, who have no love lost. And I thought they did really, really well here. So first, let's go, I think, to, like, the decision of the episode. Swathi versus Tori, where do you think they should have gone with this decision?
Oh, it's just interesting because, so from Swathi's perspective, wrong move. Like, she shouldn't have been trying to work with Tori because, like we were saying before, there's so many, she could have been third. she should have been working long term and short term in terms of like, clearly these two are a duo. I'm not in the duo, but I can make it a trio. There are literally two people who are agitating the other two to the point that I could be third. Yes, Drea has all these advantages, but, you know, advantages for her are your advantages as well, as long as you're closely aligned with someone. So I think from that perspective, bad. But then for the others, once they sort of discovered that Swathi was doing all that sort of stuff, yeah, like, Tori is on the bottom. She is, because realistically, the reason why all of that sort of Tori and Zach and stuff blowback sort of happened was because Zach told Tori about the her looking for an idol and then the repercussions from that. So Tori hasn't actually necessarily proven that she is distrustful or anything. She just has been playing from the bottom. So you can at least give her some leverage on that to think, you know, she is trying to play hard and she is trying to climb back up. But Swathi, she wasn't on the bottom. So it doesn't make any sense for me. If I was there, I'd be like, well, I don't know why you think you have any sort of like insecurities in regards to our alliance. Like, why are you doing all of this? So I guess, yeah, on one hand, Swathi, bad. But for everybody else, I think good.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tori, she's not been a liar. Like, if anything, the issue is that she can't keep a secret. Like, she's too honest with other people's secrets, and every single person who's ever told her anything has basically not lived to tell the tale or suffered for it. You know, Drea her extra vote, Zach with the fact that people were talking about her going and looking for the idol, Swathi and saying like, okay, well, let's go and take out Drea. Like, they give her all this information and she uses it as ammo, which is a worrying thing for an ally. And I think Drea says it best when she's like, if I could basically get rid of both of them, I would. And I think that's the right instinct, because you don't want someone to spill all of your secrets, but at least you can control that. Like, now everything's come out.
Yes.
Drea has won the day in that. And like, okay, well, now we can move forward with Tori, just controlling ourselves to not give her any information. I think the difference with Swathi is Swathi was the liar. And like, she had to keep burying herself with the lie.
Yes.
Awkwardly, I would say, to try and cover for the fact that she was like, I don't know why Tori had turned on you. Like, she was the one who came up with the plan. In the she said, Swathi is absolutely the liar in this situation. Tori is telling the truth. And then, you know, like a little bit of similarities through like a he said she said from the season of Australian Survivor, but that's why I feel like there's a lot in it. There's perception, there's the fact that with Tori, what you see is what you get. Like, she's so transparent that it feels like it's gonna be hard for her to do anything, and you can probably try and control that, whereas Swathi was coming across as innocent but was actually working more like in the shadow. So there's a perception of that. There's the fact that she was actually creating these plans and then lying about it. Like, she, I think, ended up becoming definitely the biggest threat.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's that sort of thing with trust. Like, you want to depend on your alliance members to sort of enact the things you want to do and know that they're not just turning around and, you know, talking behind your back. And, yeah, the unfortunate thing is that even when Swathi identified that, you know, things were unraveling around her, she didn't sort of come clean and she didn't sort of realize that the best strategy right now is to come clean. I did mention this stuff to Tori. She's now taken this information and now spilling the beans. I thought, I don't know. I don't know what sort of relationship they necessarily particularly had, but like, all of this stuff has happened. I'm so sorry. Hopefully you can forgive me, but I'm willing to sort of stick by your side, blah, 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 blah.
So I don't think that Swathi should have stayed with Drea and Romeo. I like what she was trying to do with Roxroy and Tori, because those are her, what she said in X interviews, like her two closest connections. She's never going to be on top with Romeo and Drea. They do have an extra vote. Like, let's blindside it now, take out Drea with the extra vote and have full control. I think that's amazing for Swathi. So I think that plan would be best. My issue with Swathi was in approach. So a couple of things. The first thing being that, like, she had way too many conversations, and I think it can be myopic to think, like, I'm just going to have conversations with everyone, and they're not going to talk to each other. But if they have even one conversation where they'd verify this information, I am done. Like, it was so easy for them to compare those stories. So I think like, in the draft, pre-season, a lot of us were turned off the younger players just due to age from season 41 and seeing just, like, you know, some faults of younger players that will definitely, you know, go out through time, but like, when you're younger, there's just some things that might like overawe you in the game. And I think we saw that with Swathi. Like, I think it is short-sighted to have these conversations and not think about kind of everyone else's agency in the game and the kind of conversations they'll be having about you and without you. So I think we saw kind of that age come to the fore, a little bit of that, like, insistence. She said that other people were calling her number one, but to say to everyone, you're my number one, they're making it so specific, so numerical when there are, like, softer ways to prove trust. I do think that it's approach for me. And the biggest thing in approach, and I don't know if this is her fault and if she sanctioned Tori going to Rox Roy or if, like, Tori went rogue, but that three makes so much sense to me. Like, for all of them, why is Tori in charge of that interaction? Like, she puts off Rox Roy so badly, where if Swathi, who has a great relationship with Rox, goes to him, she has, like, such a compelling argument, and this is it. It's basically, like, Drea has this extra vote. She hasn't told you about it. You're the only one she hasn't told about it. She is coming for the guys. Probably, we assume, Rox, right? She's coming for you. This is our last chance before they get power with, you know, Romeo and Drea having that extra vote. If they come back and they take out Tori, for example, we're at a 3-2 disadvantage. We need this three. You've been saying your name. I know you don't want to work with Tori. I'll take care of Tori. You won't have to deal with her. I'll do it. It'll be me and you at the center of this. We'll take out Drea, and then we can come back and we get to decide between Tori or Romeo, whatever it is. We're going to have the power, me and you. I think there's such a compelling argument there of her giving the information of Drea's advantage, which I think, even though, you know, Rox Roy did not enjoy that when it came from Tori, I think if it came from Swathi and it really came like, I'm going to protect us and it's for us, I think he would like that a lot more. I think a lot of it had to do with just his personal issues with Tori. So in approach, I just wish she had been able to go to Rox. And I don't know if this was Tori or if she had had conversations but they hadn't gone as well. I think she's the one who should be delivering that information about the advantage, because it's a big deal that Drea told everyone other than Rox. He should care about that. And I truly believe this three was a better deal for him. So if she can sell what I believe is a good pitch to him, I think that's a better thing. I don't think there's a home for her with Romeo and with Drea, but I just think in approach, you know, she's been working against and she gets caught out. There's a three for you there, but it wasn't handled well. And a lot of that is on the Rox Roy conflict that she, you know, as a young person, but like she did have to manage that.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that she probably was hoping, because obviously we didn't see that transpire, so we can't, so we don't know how, what she would have said or whatever. But I think one of the things is that I think maybe in Tori going rogue, or maybe she incentivized Tori to do it, maybe she was thinking that, you know, if it does blow back, it'll blow back on her. But unfortunately, the chain of information leads all back to her, to Swathi. And so unfortunately, that was, because it just makes me think of like you, if you want to, you know, form a new alliance, take charge and do a big move, you need to have so much agency in every element of that coming to be. And so, yeah, even the fact that we are entertaining the idea that, you know, Tori might have just gone rogue and done it. Well, if you're sitting in the water with, because the funny thing is, I watched episode 2 and 3 back to back. So the last thing I saw before the episode we didn't see them was Swathi talking to Tori in the water, being like, we need to turn on Drea. And then, you know, we didn't see them for a whole episode, and now we see this now. So that was really fresh in my mind. That was like, okay, Swathi's going to do something. But then as we watch this episode, she seemingly was very airy-fairy about it, and Tori clearly has a personality where she is willing to, you know, she's very transparent and very direct. What Swathi, unfortunately, is probably not in her personality to be like that, but she really needed to have taken charge, because that is your move, like, we're in this era where everybody, especially all these fans, are like really encouraging to do big moves, but you can't do a passive big move. Like, that doesn't exist. You can't say after the fact, oh, yes, me, Swathi, it means weird, I'm Swathi, but like me, Tori and Rox, decided to make this alliance. We turned on Drea, yada, 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 but that, and that was my move. But Tori could be like, well, but I was the one who went up to Rox and divulged this information, and I was the one who actually initiated it. Yeah, you came up to me, but I actually brought us together. I think, yeah, unfortunately, her approach was very wrong, but I also think she clearly had some sort of hope that, you know, if it did go wrong, it would blow back on Tori, and then she could go back to the others as sort of sitting in the middle. But when you're in a group of 5, like, you're not in a group of 12. Yeah, like, you're not an Australian survivor tribe. Like, you don't have anywhere to hide. And so, unfortunately, yeah, that information really quickly can just be exposed to literally everybody. And I think she overestimated how well she was sitting in the middle, because the person on the bottom is always going to expose you. It's always in their best interest.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point about it being such a small tribe and people having more conversations because it's less spread out. So that information can come to the fore even more. And, like, she's been making big moves until now. Like, Drea comes to them with an all-girl thing. She turns against Drea. That's a big move in and of itself. And if she's going to turn against Drea, Rox needed to be a part of that. That's the move that she's pitching from a couple of episodes ago. And that's what she's pitching to Tori here. And I do think that was a good instinct. But it's either a bad read on Rox and that he's never going to work with Tori, in which case she's pitching things, especially to a loose cannon like Tori, that are never going to come off, which is a mistake, even though I think it's super optimal. Like, maybe it's not there. And then she's putting herself out there for a plan that's never going to happen. Or it's in the approach that, like, how is she not the one to approach Rox earlier when she's been talking about it? We saw, you know, two episodes ago, and I know timing would be different. But I think it's about her relationship with Rox that she needed to really lock this in.
Yeah.
And, like, honestly, I think it's on Rox as well. Like, I think that he, like, when he being the swing vote, like, he should have flipped. And it shouldn't be about, oh, well, I mean, like, it's not chess, but, like, it shouldn't be about, I don't want to work with Tori. Shouldn't be about, oh, well, she told me, like, she's the kind of person who will tell me about the extra vote. It's like something that we saw on Australian Survivor where, you know, it became about, oh, well, my ally told me another ally secret, and then they were less concerned about the secret, but they were more about, okay, well, you're the kind of ally who would tell a secret. But Tori's not aligned to Drea, so it's not even threatening. It's like she's telling an enemy secret that Drea possibly shouldn't have told her. So Rox should have taken that information and really gone with this three. You know, Drea's come against him in a way that Swathi never has, and even Tori hasn't. That's a three for him. That's giving him information that he didn't otherwise have. And I think that as a swing vote, really, of these two pairs, I think that he made the wrong decision, and that three was completely optimal, and he wants to keep Swathi, and he's not important enough to Romeo and Drea for that to happen, and then Swathi goes home. And that just shows where he stands with Romeo and Drea. He's given them all the power when he could have taken it for himself, and to a degree, Swathi is working with that non-optimal play by Roxroy, which is really, really tough. But I also think that she personally, maybe, and maybe we didn't see it, but she should have been doing more to get it over the line, because it makes so much sense for those three, and they have the power in this vote, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, because it's something I've realized from Rox is that I think he's, and I saw maybe somebody commented on Reddit, but somebody pointed out that he's very much an old school player. Like, he's very much more emotions driven. Even the gesture he sort of made at Tribal Council about, you know, Swathi, she's having this moment right now, like, Lala. That's like a very evident signifier of how close they were, that he was willing to sort of speak about her in that way. But I think the thing is like, when you're out there, you should be able to identify what sort of player he is and work with sort of his ideals and that sort of thing. So if, for example, Swathi had gone up to him and said, these two have explicitly not told information, they've done all this stuff, they are so mistrust.
Drea wants a girls alliance. Like, it was going to be against you. Like,
They want to turn it.
Legitimate ammo.
Can you believe that? Like, I'm shocked. Like, I can't believe she came up to me and said that she has this extra vote. Like, I think we need to, we have to get her out. Like, all this sort of stuff. But instead, it was like Tori, the person on the bottom, saying, oh, well, Drea, like, because then that just comes across like she's like tabling, like she's like telling on Drea. So unfortunately, especially like the only way I can relate to a small group was the fact that I was left with a group of six. But at that point, you know, I had known enough about everybody that I knew I was done, because I knew enough about each person and where their priorities lied. And so when you've been with these people for over a week at this point, I feel like you should have a decent understanding of what their priorities are in the game, and also how to approach that strat talk. Like, because if Rox isn't that sort of person, he's like, or Tori's like this because she did this thing. Well, maybe have a conversation with him that sort of rationalizes what she has done to make it make sense to him in a positive way, and then reframe what the other two have done to sell it to him to then, you know, bring the two together. But I feel like, unfortunately, because of Swathi's age, she hasn't had that lived experience for her to understand that is sort of how you can relate to people, but also how to play that social game. Like, it's just, I was thinking about this before, after I watched the episode, but it's one with this sort of idea of super fans and people who've watched the show, it's one thing to sort of understand the show and sort of, you know, understand, you know, the twists and, you know, the numbers of it all and all that sort of stuff. And it's another thing to sort of break it down and understand why things have happened and the social dynamics and why each person, what they individually value. And so I think with this sort of more recent, very meta-ness of Survivor, you know, they will throw in people like Rox who will be very black and white in regards to all these sorts of things. And I think, unfortunately, when you approach it like, these are the numbers, this thing particularly happened, I'm going to make you do this, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, that's great and all, but the people actually need to understand and think it aligns with what they believe is the reality of it all. Obviously, we talk about a lot about perception and reality and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, I just feel like, unfortunately, you're right. This group of three would have been great, and Swathi could have been in the middle and could have taken away all the power from Drea by voting her out without her realizing. But I think we're asking a lot of somebody who is 19 years old to understand how to bring a stay-at-home dad of multiple kids and this, like, rando therapist lady together, you know, like
blonde-headed woman, blonde-headed girls, I think what Jonathan called her.
Blonde-headed girl. So unfortunately, like, yeah, I just don't think she had enough lived experience to sort of know how to unite those two on a personal deep level outside of the objective fact of it all.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. And it's like, well, maybe she intended to have that conversation with Rox, and Tori just kind of jumped and had it first. We don't really know who's at fault there. I definitely think, like, Tori being so disingenuous in her kind of interactions with Rox, she thinks she's being really kind of genuine, and or that Rox would buy it and he doesn't. Like, those are social missteps from Tori that we're asking Buffy to manage, which is difficult. I think that the reason that the three can't come together is because of this really fractured relationship between Rox, Roy and Tori. And that's another reason that I really, really, really back taking out Swathi. Because why would you take out Tori, who is like the kind of barrier almost between Swathi and Rox, Roy in their relationship? Like, one of the things that I love most about what they did was that they take out Swathi, and now they come back with a 2-1-1, not even including the extra vote. They come back with a 2-1-1 with Rox and Tori, who can never work together. Like, I know we've seen kind of enemies work together before. We've seen Mike and High find common ground kind of against the power, and that's what they should do. But there's such a personality clash there. Again, in the face of everything optimal and in needing to work together, they come back with a 2-1-1 where they control those relationships and have total power. They're now at the top of the hierarchy. They've done it. They've structured it. I love seeing that strategy compared to, all right, well, let's keep in Swathi and Rox, right? Well, that's a pair. I'm especially hearing that Rox, in Swathi's exit, she says Rox was kind of against Romeo. That's a close pair who aren't at all kind of fractured by any relationship with Tori trying to work with her. They do have an extra vote, but you don't want to have to use the extra vote. You can keep it to the merge. Swathi and Tori are both not good allies, especially for Drea.
Yeah.
But at least you control everything Tori's doing rather than coming back and having this relationship between Rox and Swathi that you don't control.
Oh, it's like, at this point, if they have to go back to tribal, what else does Tori have to say? Like,
no,
there's literally
one has
nothing.
And, like, that's the thing, is no one has anything other than their power with that, like, other than their relationship with Romeo and Drea specifically. Yeah. And that's like, what it is. Like, they're right in the center of it, rather than getting it at like a 2-2 and your advantage, and maybe someone loses a vote or whatever. Like, no, like, they're in so much power that, like, I don't see how it could go wrong. So it's that structuring that I really, really love.
And, like, okay, and now going back to Pegato, but, like, you know, for example, and then if it is Tori who finds the Boer advantage, now she doesn't even have a vote. Like, and if Mike doesn't even say his thing, then she can't even vote. You still have a power of 2-1 or 1-1-1. So, like, I think what they did was definitely the right decision. Like we keep saying, the tribes are so small that navigating a lot of this stuff would be so easy as long as you have the right relationships with these people. And if you can identify that these three people are not even getting on the same page, because, like, it was like that part where they're like, she said I was her number one, or she said I, and then they played it. It was like, at that point you realize, okay, well then, we're the two in the center of this weird dynamic. Whoever we can divide it, like, basically I'm reiterating what you're saying, but it is a really good strategy, because at this point I don't think, though, from those two's perspective, I don't think either of them can realistically work with either of the three if they go to a merge or whatever situation, because now they've seen that Rox lives on planet Rox, like, he does his own thing. Tori's just going to do whatever, and Swathi now can clearly just do whatever. So, yeah, they picked the right person to ensure the other two don't work together, but also they picked the right person who, if they were going to go to a merge situation, would actually probably do the most damage, because she is already thinking in that one step below surface level, transparent sort of behavior. She just thought she was getting away with it a lot slicker than she was.
Well, I think what I loved about it was that at the tribal council, they're like, it's about cutting division. Like, they want to be like this kind of united front. Actually, it was about sowing division so that they could have the whole power. And that's what I really love about it. And not that they know about the Boer advantage, but like, Idrea's got the amulet and she's been to Shipwell Island. Like, the game is a monster. Anything can happen. Like, definitely having like kind of impossible to destroy power is best case scenario. Because, okay, so say like Drea does find the Boer advantage and loses even her two votes. I mean, she could give the extra vote to Romeo. They'd still be okay, because there's no way that either of the other two are working together against them. Like, they just have such full power in the face of this fast-moving monster game, which I think is brilliant. Especially against the three that at this juncture should immediately be taking it out. And I think when we see Romeo ask Drea at Tribal Council, are you thinking of using your extra vote? On Nordals, they're like, oh, maybe he's trying to flush the extra vote. I don't think so. I think this is a very, very tight pair at the top. I think he's thinking, like, just in case these three start working logically and working against us, we'll take it to at least tie. And I love the thought of that. But then I also love the read not to do it. But I think that it's a genuinely valid question, because they're quite logical players, Romeo and Drea. And I would be thinking, especially, you know, Romeo's been playing so well, like, I'd be thinking, like, if they come together and realize that they're at the top and they have the numbers right now, we might need that extra vote, because they should, and maybe more logical players would. So I think that it's a really, really good thought, and shows just how optimal that three would have been and how well they did, and the internal conflict, but how well they did to get the complete power here when there was the numbers against them that could have taken them out.
Yeah. Oh, especially, like, now I'm thinking about it, I feel like this format of seasons is probably the only way that having an extra vote really does help. And because, you know, especially also with finding Beware advantages and stuff like that, then losing votes, like, having an extra vote now is more useful and, you know, actually makes sense, because, you know, now that you can potentially lose a vote. It would be kind of funny, because I was thinking about, was it you or Haley that was saying that Drea was going too hard, too fast?
I've not been on the Drea train until this episode. I thought she did amazing. And I think that, like, a lot of the problems of the past, like, a lot of, like, misreading Swathi, telling about the extra vote, trying to do this girl's alliance, you know, coming for Rockroy, like, a lot of that was made up for in this episode, where a lot of that came out on the table and she wanted those interactions, took out Swathi. It's all out in the open now. She kind of made up some ground with Roxroy, who still showed loyalty to her. So a lot of the mistakes of the past, she covered for really, really well in this episode.
Yeah, because I feel like Drea, because when I was watching Drea's I think the best thing about Romeo and Drea as people, and you watch in their personalities, is especially Drea, she's very calm. She's very cool. In challenges, she's fully capable. And so I can imagine that she'd be very hard to read, but also simultaneously very comforting. Like, and same with Romeo. Like, I feel like they both have personalities that, even if they go merge and, you know, meet all these other people, I don't even think people from the other tribes would necessarily identify them as big players, crazy players, have multiple advantages all at once. Well, obviously, Hi and Lindsay know about the one advantage, but, you know, all of this sort of stuff, like, I think it is a really big testament to Drea's sort of game that she was able to load up so hard on all that stuff, it get exposed, but everybody still just can't pull the pin for some reason. And I think it's because they all see her as somebody that they can align with, because she is that sort of presence, which is something that not everybody has. And it's great that we've been able to see it play out, because, like you were saying, after the first episode, I was like, what the hell? Like, you're literally taking every opportunity you can. Well, one of them was kind of given to her, but you're taking every opportunity you can. But when the game is so short, you know, they'll probably merge in what, like, three episodes? So then all of a sudden, woo, like, you've made it. Like, now all your advantages are just, like, you've got all the powers all of a sudden. I think, now, having seen these two seasons, that sort of going hard really fast strategy probably will work out, but I think it will only work out for people who are able to play that very chill social game and still be that person that everybody wants to come to work with, even when, like, Swathi really, she attempted, but unfortunately the others still wanted to work with her. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I feel like Dre is the kind of player who's only going to have, like, either big falls or big victories, because she does play, like, at 100. And this week was definitely a big victory. Like, in terms of advantage versus ally, which is something I always say, like, choose your ally, you know, unless there's, like, kind of other mitigating circumstances, and less so in a 26-day game. And but then again, less so with an extra vote. And I am saying that one of the reasons I really like sewing this division was to keep the extra vote. But I think that the reason is because neither Swathi or Tori are really allies. Like, with allies like that, who needs enemies? Because Swathi's already put her name out there. I think it's been worse for Drea. Like, Tori spills secrets. Tori's all over the place. But, like, Swathi was particularly targeting Drea. So you don't want Swathi at the merge. And then Tori, you also, again, she said she doesn't want either. You don't really want that either. At the very least, your extra vote, maybe it'll be a little bit useless, more meaningful in a format like this, as you're saying. But it definitely isn't at least putting your name out there. Like, I'll take my extra vote, please. So I would be putting more stock into that. And then there's all the other parts of that, like the fact that Tori is already disliked by Jonathan and he doesn't even know her name. The fact that Tori says that she thought she'd be under the radar because she's never met herself. Like, how could she possibly? Yes. Like, that's the lack of self-awareness. It just shows that Tori might be the death of them. And Swathi might have been too. But, like, and Tori could do damage. But, like, also Tori can't win. So, like, you're taking out, like, I think a more stealth player than someone who you completely understand her. You know what you get. And you have to manage it. It's like a full-time job. Yep. But hopefully you can do that. And it is a bad option because neither of them are good options to her. But in this way, at least she has, like, full control of this tribe and, like, let's move forward with that. So tricky spot working with either of those people.
Yeah.
But I also think it's interesting when you talk about the amulet. Hai's at the top of his tribe. Lindsay's in a great position. Freya's in a great position. Looks like we'll be getting to the merge with all of them with some power around them. I'm really interested to see how that plays out at the merge because that actually might impact things for sure.
Oh, fully. Oh, especially because now I was just, like, thinking about the makeup of this tribe. I was like, I would not be surprised if the two of them at a certain point, especially after that first tribal, were like, we're just Matt singing it. Like, I would not be surprised if those two are just hoping to get to a point where it is those two entering the merge and they just
Romeo
become
and
just like, Romeo and Drea.
I think so. I mean, I think that would be ideal for them. Like, if they lose again, I don't know if it's worth, like, throwing a challenge because that's always dicey, especially with Tori because she keeps surviving. But, like, I would want Tori out for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, fully. Like, I feel like it's very, very rare of such a tiny minority enters the merge and then people go, oh, I'm going to pick off these two randos. No, they're valuable. And especially if Hai and Lindsay, well, this is the bit where it's a bit shaky. It's like Hai and Lindsay now know that she has an advantage. If Marianne knows that she got an extra vote, what's not to say that Drea doesn't have an extra vote?
Mm.
So all these little things, but knowing that they potentially have, like, loaded up on all these advantages, what's not to say that people don't, let's have this extra vote and this other advantage just, like, superpower up. Yeah, it's sort of really interesting because that's probably what they're thinking, actually, now thinking about it. It's those two surviving long enough. They're not going to, production's not going to let them Stephanie themselves. Like, they're not going to be, like, sole human one tribe. So, yeah, I think that might actually, now we're talking it out, I think they might actually just be like, let's just make sure it's just us two.
Yeah, they won't have time, but I think it would be best for them, at least if Tori doesn't get to the merge, because it's tricky to deal with. I thought Drea did really well. I thought Romeo did well. Like, he's very much the instigator. Like, he gets that information from Tori. He runs with it. He's kind of putting a lot of the information together. Like, a lot of this is Drea and Romeo trying to discern the liar between, like, what is at that point Tori and Swathi throwing each other under the bus. And I think, like, they found out who the liar was. It was Swathi, and they, like, acted accordingly. So I think that they both did really well there. Something that surprised me was Swathi saying that Rox wanted Romeo out. So that was interesting to me because I thought that was, like, a closer relationship. So it really does seem like Rox and Tori, like, that was the oil and water thing, more than even, like, necessarily Drea and Romeo keeping Rox on board. So I do think that, you know, bad decision in terms of him being the swing vote in those groups. But then we've had some questions around, okay, so then his vote is for Tori. So did you have any thoughts about what's happening here of him not voting for Swathi?
Oh, I was so confused when that happened, but I obviously knew it was him. I don't I don't know. Like, because when I saw that come out, I was like, well, that's clearly his vote, because he clearly thought he was voting with Swathi.
Yeah.
But then I don't know what, like, how he was, like, mate, was Drea and Romeo, like, Tori, guess what? It's Swathi. Tori's like, sure. And they maybe have set something up that we haven't seen that has put her on side with them. Like, maybe they have made that the decision already to take Tori further than Rox. Just maybe that's why the show is showing us that he is a divisive character in a different way. Like, they haven't shown... Well, they showed Drea in the first episode being like... Or the second episode being like, ugh, he's too much or whatever. And that's why I want a Girls Alliance, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's always seemed to me like Drea and Rox had no love lost. Like, she's coming for Rox in episode one, and then when she proposes the Girls Alliance, obviously it's not against Romeo, who she seems really tight with. So
yeah.
Even more so, that's why I think Rox 100% should not be going with Drea.
Yes.
He's apparently wanted Romeo out for strength-based reasons. So yes. It doesn't seem like there's a lot there for him.
Yeah, yeah. So I think in this scenario, it is boo-boo on Rox. Forever for doing whatever the hell, like, I have no idea what his mind is telling him to be doing, but he clearly has the wrong read of the scenario at hand and the wrong read of the people around him. But now I guess I can see, after remembering the old girl thing in the first episode, that the reason why Tori was so easily being able to be shifted up was that clearly her and Drea have some sort of relationship, even when Tori took Drea aside in that first episode, and that was the sort of snowball effect for Zach. Clearly Drea can see that Tori has some sort of loyalty to her that Rox will just never have.
Yeah, definitely Tori and Drea's relationship is more up and down than most Survivor relationships you'll see. But I definitely have some theories around Rox's vote. So we see them come to Rox and say, you know, we want to take out Swathi, and he's like not into that at all. So he either thinks that he's in his stubbornness changed their mind, or he's just not doing it, blank and not doing it. He's not going to put his vote there, which is a very old school way of thinking. I think they would be thinking that this is fine, because they know that Swathi is either playing a shot in the dark or voting against Tori. Tori's voting against Swathi. So they'll just say, okay, this is actually better for us, because now it becomes like an accidental split. So what will happen is that if Swathi plays her shot in the dark and it hits, and Tori thinks that the three of us are together with Rox, and she thinks it's going to be maybe 4-1 or 4-0, Swathi plays with shot in the dark, she might throw her vote. It's something we've been talking about before. Should Tori have thrown her vote in the first time? Should Marianne throw her vote? So she throws her vote on Drea. At that point, now, Swathi shot in the dark has hit, and now it's a 2-1-1 because Rox has provided that split rather than Drea going home or Romeo going home on the throne vote. So it becomes like a, you know, a great split. If Tori thinks, like, obviously if she thinks Rox isn't with them, then that becomes, like, she wouldn't do it because she'd know she'd lose on the revote, or she'd actually worse think Swathi would vote, and that she might, like, send herself to a tie when she's thrown the vote and could actually go home on, like, a 2-2-1 revote. Hopefully this is all making sense. If she thinks that Rox is with Drea and Romeo, she might throw her vote, and now they're protecting against that thrown vote in case Shot in the Dark hits. So it's something he wants to do anyway. They're covered in it. They might as well do it. So I think they would be like, you want Rox. You've come to with it. You're going to be stubborn. You can't be mad at us. What are you going to come back and work with Tori anyway? Obviously not. So you're going to need us anyway. You do what you want. But I think that him saying, no, I'm definitely not voting for Swathi, and them not going with it, just shows how unimportant he is to that group.
Yes.
And how much he should have definitely flipped to be with Swathi and Tori. But I think it makes a lot of sense for them to just let him do what he wants. And if it's an emotional thing where he just won't put the name down, or he thinks they're going with it, either way, I just don't really think that it matters. So I think that they're kind of just running rings around everyone else in the tribe.
Oh, literally, if people's rando decisions still play well into your hand, then clearly you're doing something good, because it's set up around
you. You can literally vote against our plan, and it still actually works better for us. Thanks, Rox.
Yes,
like,
literally.
Now I don't have to go home on a shot in the dark and a thrown vote. Like, sure. Like, you know, we just have, like, full control from this minority position of 2 of 5. Like, that is pure power. Like, that's why I think it's underrated.
Oh, fully. Like,
people aren't talking about it enough.
I think the thing is that because now, because, like, for example, we're talking it out, and it does seem very, like, amazing, like, but I think there was such a smoke screen of the emotional decision of Swathi you know, blowing up her own game, that, you know, when you look behind that curtain, yeah, actually, everything that happened clearly makes sense from the perspective of Romeo and Drea, because it's not them. It's literally one of the other three people. They're eliminating the person that basically spilled all, like, it's crazy that, yeah, it worked out so well. And there's, like, I think we all keep forgetting this is when the speed of this game really does come into play. Because, you know, when in a normal season, you know, you have every 3 days, and then, you know, that times, what, 13? Like, very long period of time. But the speed of which they're going to hit the merge is going to just be so quick that, you know, a lot of these sorts of decisions will pay off a lot sooner than I think a lot of people realize. And so while people would approach this episode and think it's a very conventional episode, I think it will be it's very defining of what Drea and Romeo's intent and sort of their priorities are, and also how well they are able to navigate three very different people and three very different strategies, because they seemingly are on the same page.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, like, Taku voted out Mariah and have been, like, such a strong unit, and they're going to go to the merge with that. But they also have the benefit of probably not going back to a tribal council, and it's amazing that they even went to a tribal council. Like, they're so strong. Yes. He could definitely go back. So if you're thinking about, like, tribe unity and getting to a merge, you would think, okay, well, let's vote in this, like, unanimous vote. Let's, like, make Swathi feel good, doesn't have to play a shot in the dark, and then it's going to be 4-1 against Tori. We'll vote with Rock Tori. We'll be the solid group. But it's first, I think it's a false unity, because that has not been what Swathi has been to them. So I don't believe it's truly, like, if you can be truly unified and trying to get to a merge, that has long-term gain, but they don't have that. So I think that instead coming back when Rox has just voted against Tori, like, their relationship has been bad enough and Rox just voted against Tori, you are absolutely in control even without the advantages. So I think that they did exceedingly well. Should we hop from one disaster tribe to another and talk about Vati, who came back from last week's Disaster Tribal Council. We did see a relationship form. High and Mike. Yes. Hike is the couple name that I think just writes itself. What do you think about the way that High and Mike handled this after everything that we saw last week?
I think it's just so funny, because I guess one of the things that sort of, because at that point now, the rest of them know Mike doesn't have a vote because of the advantage, right?
Yes.
Yes, so
and they all it know makes that.
So it. I feel like it makes sense for Hai and Mike to align together, because it's both in their best interest to get to the merge, because they both have advantages.
Yeah, that's something that I hadn't thought about. So yeah, we're getting a bit of a power trust. I mean, it's interesting because he wins the day of everyone fighting over themselves to align with Hai and Lydia, and he doesn't even have a vote to vote with them, but it won't matter because obviously Daniel and Chanel wouldn't vote together. But it's not even just that he doesn't have a vote, he then will have an advantage, which for Hai, that could be like a really powerful thing that they could combine on.
Yeah, it's the formation of what Drea and Romeo have in that, but it's happening later on down the line. Because obviously they don't know that Hai has the advantage at all, but Hai does know. So he's like, I've proven my loyalty to Lydia. She's not going to waver. And Mike has this advantage. I don't know surely at some explicit point, it's like, I don't have a vote until we have to say all the phrases. But it's like, awesome, because then we can load up together as a group if we all go together. Because at this point, we know Daniel's done. Like, there's nothing he can do. He doesn't have any of the advantages. He's injured. He spills all the beans. He folds under pressure. He's the clear next boot. If we had to go back to tribal, if we can at this point collect, control all the advantages, control everything, then we'll be a unified unit. So when I saw them work together, I don't know. I feel like also just like their personalities and all that sort of stuff, I feel like it is a natural fit as well, because they seem to be very like just like personable, you know, very natural people. And so I feel like that is a very good unit to have formed. And I was really happy to see that sort of happen. I don't know. There's something about Mike I really like, and I love High. So, and I love Lydia. So I liked that unified group.
I just thought they both did so well. Like, Daniel comes back and he doesn't want to talk about it. And I think it's like been spoken about on Know It Alls. Like, I think ideally, if you can, like, do something positive after all of that, like, do it. Worst case scenario is, like, you're so mentally spent that you make it worse. Like, so maybe best to avoid that. So I get it on a human level of just, like, not being able to do anything in that moment. But I do think that Hai, who has also been through a ton that night, like, has kind of the wherewithal to really approach it again so well. Like, he says he feels blindsided, but he says he's not mad. And then he kind of falls on his sword with Mike and says he owes him, like, an explanation. And they consolidate so well. Like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And they're both, like, very much against Daniel. And like, Mike receives that so well. And just, like, the way that connection is formed, we see them, like, hugging in the challenge. Like, they both kind of really give a lot there socially on a very, very tiring night. So that, like, you know, I commend them for that.
It just makes sense to me for that sort of relationship to develop, for that alliance to sort of be formed, because at the end of the day, now you both have had an understanding of how to read a certain type of person. You're both on two ends of one person's sort of craziness, I guess. And so you can share notes on that and sort of, you know, pick up from where that sort of left off and be like, well, he told me this, and then he told me this, and then he did this, and he did this, and blah, blah, blah. And so it's almost like a case study. Like, you have a unifying experience and you know what's happened. And in Survivor, that sort of experience really does help you.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Daniel and Chanel, the thing that was crazy to me was that they really get in trouble mostly for, like, being swings, which I was surprised about, because I felt like, well, a couple of things. The first thing being, like, I thought they were quite transparently the swinging pair last time.
Yes.
And I thought that that would kind of be forgiven, in like, they seem to be quite open about it. It's like, oh, I'm just telling them this, but I'm with you. There was always going to be fallout from that, even without, like, Ross and the lost votes. But obviously Chanel doesn't have to cop to it, and that becomes the issue. But I was surprised that there was so much heat on them for that. And the other thing that surprised me was that they weren't really swings. Like, they chose Mike and Jenny. Like, so much so that we were saying last week, like, they really shouldn't. It was completely optimal for them to go with Hai and Lydia. They didn't have the votes to go with Mike and Jenny. And they went to bat for them so badly that it ruined their whole game. So at least they should be able to consolidate something with Mike. But I guess there's no numbers there because they don't even have each other. But Mike is mad. If I was Daniel, I'd be saying, Mike, like, it's hard because at points he was against Mike with the beware stuff. But they did go to bat for Mike. They'd be like, Mike, look how much, like, I didn't want to send you to rocks. But until then, like, I really put myself out there. I put myself in that position where we were even having the discussion. And when votes were lost, like, that was what I wanted to do, even through the revote. Like, I really, really wanted to work with you and Jenny. So maybe it's pointless because Daniel and Chanel don't have each other, but at the very least, you should be able to say to Mike, like, you know, I really put myself out there for you. I think what's hard is that, like, the real tangible evidence against him working against Mike was the fact that he had told Chanel about the beware advantage, and Chanel has that as this, like, the nail in the coffin for the, like, to bury Daniel. And it really does feel like Daniel is at the bottom of that hierarchy. And credit to Chanel on that, because if it is her versus Daniel, like, she absolutely has, like, that ammo that she uses. And Mike doesn't even seem to be mad that she's an outed his idol to the rest of the tribe. Like, he's really mad at Daniel for giving over that information. So she definitely wins in that interaction.
Yeah, because it reminds you of that when the Mike and Daniel were talking and Daniel's like, I said, you're my number one. And then Mike was like, yeah, but then, like, Daniel just, like, quadrupled down on, it was almost like the you're my number one thing with Swathi, but Daniel was
the argument was about them being the number one. And I was like, when I rewatched it, I'm like, this was a lot of the theme of the episode.
Yeah, literally. I was like, so why are you telling Mike that you basically were lying to his face saying I was your number one when you were really with Chanel? And then feeding all this information and la 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 la, because, like, I think it was very obvious for everybody that Jenny and Mike were each other's number one. So I don't know why Daniel thought that sort of going through this hullabaloo about, like, I said, you were my number, it's like, but you weren't Mike's number one. So to Mike, that's just like, you're just lying for some, you're not even being transparent with what you think I am doing. Like, that was very strange to me. And good on Chanel. I was thinking about it because she didn't have a vote, and obviously she didn't know she didn't have a vote until they had to re-vote 15 times. But because she didn't have a vote, it did really allow her to just basically be like, I didn't even vote. Like, I didn't have, it's all on you. It's all. And so when she came back and was all sort of over-strategizing and stuff like that, Yes, she didn't know that she didn't have a vote, but the reality is she could easily have just said, the reason why I did all that was to expose Daniel. And that is what, and I knew I couldn't vote. And that's basically what happened. So she did play it well in that way, but then she also played it very poorly in other ways. But in her not getting that sort of blowback, I think she did sort of try to manage that in some capacity, whether or not it was intentional or not. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that she definitely wins in this interaction, but he definitely buried himself at points. But, like, I will say I do see Daniel's point more now in throwing Chanel under the bus because, I mean, look, they're both wrong, I think, because they both were the swings, and that's what they're getting the heat for, which surprises me. It's not about, really all Daniel did wrong was to Chanel and throwing her under the bus. Like, and he was working against her and Lydia, but they both were. So him specifically, that's all he did, but he's the only one getting the heat. So I get his frustration because for him, like, he's going in and saying, I had no agency and I'm Chanel's puppet, which is untrue, unfair. That's what we saw last week. That's what she's angry at. But then equally, she's acting like she, like, had no intention just because she had no vote. Like, I didn't have a vote. It's like, yeah, but you had a plan. Like, what? Like, you lost your vote 2 hours before. You didn't have a side. Like, you obviously had an intention of what you were going with. And it's obviously just, you know, like, it's laughable to say that you didn't. So I get why he's really frustrated with that. I think what the question is for us as viewers is who started it? Like, that's really what it is. Because what it should be is it should have been, like, they were a team. Like, they were. Like, and maybe it should have been collaborative in the discussion. Like, all right, like, Chanel, what do we want to do? And that's what we spoke about with Rox last week. Like, even Mike and Chanel, what do we want to do as the three people who Daniel's making the decision for whether they're going to go to Rox, like, on that one side when they aren't part of the discussion? But instead, it becomes really accusatory. So who starts that? Like, is it Daniel saying, well, what we saw, Chanel's the one who told me what to do? And of course, then Chanel's going to be like, well, I have the out of not having a vote. Like, I didn't even do that, and take that kind of frustrating out for Daniel. Or did we miss a bit where Chanel's saying, I don't know what you should do, Daniel. I don't even have a vote. Like, you made this choice. And he's like, no, no. And doesn't even say it was us. He says, like, it was you specifically. I don't know who started the, like, finger pointing when it was really a paired decision. They're both wrong in that, but, like, I totally get reacting with that. I totally get saying, no, it was you when someone else was pointing the finger at you, but who started it? On TV, we see it was Daniel. Through some of Chanel's confessionals and her admitting kind of her agency in that, and even in a secret scene, she says to Daniel, like, I can't tell them that this is what I wanted to do. And obviously through Daniel's anger and frustration, it makes it seem like maybe Chanel at first was like, hey, I don't have a vote. This is completely on you. And he was like, no, it was completely on you. And really it was shared. But who did it first? I don't know. But they're the one who are in the wrong in the situation.
Oh, yeah. They're collectively wrong. But one of the things I was just thinking as you were sort of talking about it was that, do you think a lot of Daniel's reaction to Chanel and all that sort of stuff was that she had taken a risk at Shipwreck Island that was wrong because they knew what happened because of Jenny being honest, but, you know, her almost selfish decision had basically screwed over what plans they may have had, and then he was essentially trying to blow it back onto her because she had made a decision that worked against what he had, and that's where that sort of began. That's probably what I would be thinking in terms of where that began, how that began, because obviously we've covered that that decision that she made at Shipwreck Island was bad. But if you're still on the island and you've been formulating this sort of strategy, and then this lady comes back and she is like, I may or may not even have a vote. It's like, but why didn't you secure that you did have a vote? Oh no, what have you done? And Daniel's clearly the type to sort of overthink things. Yeah, it's just sort of interesting, but I feel like that's where it all began.
Yeah, I mean, I would be frustrated. Like, it wouldn't be frustrating enough to then put it all on her. Like, that would definitely does not excuse it. But especially then if she was the first one to be like, well, you decide, Daniel, you made this choice. Like, I don't even have a vote. And that's not true because obviously she has an intention. And the only reason you're in the situation is because she lost her vote and now is using it as an out when it screwed you all. Yep. I would be very frustrated. And
I would also be frustrated thinking,
so Mike didn't know that Chanel knew that he had lost his vote. So, and Jenny wouldn't have known that either because Daniel had betrayed them in that way. And that's why they're so mad about it now, which is funny because they wouldn't even, they must've been really worried about Chanel at Shipwreck Island, like thinking that she didn't even know how imperative her vote was, but she did know, which should have been lucky for them, but that she still risked it. So there's so many parts to that. Frustrating for both of them. Mistakes were made on both sides. I think definitely for Daniel and Chanel, like no one is clean in this.
Yes. Oh, fully. I know. That was the fun of sort of listening to everybody's discussions last week about it, because it really was a weird race of who was worse, but I think we can all agree. They were both just as bad as one another.
They were both really bad. All right, well, let's talk about Taku, who, if anything, are too good, and we'll talk about poor Jonathan. Like, for real. Like, I honestly, like, so the thing is that he's, like, talked about how strong they are as a group. Like, I totally get this. Like, he's having to deal with, like, Jeff Probst's crush, which is, like, ongoing, like, an ongoing issue. He's, like, in a very vulnerable spot in that way. It's, like, such a spotlight anyway, like, an aesthetic spotlight. And then it's being talked about, like, ad nauseum. Like, who wants to be a part of that? And when he's going to talk about it, like, what's he going to say? They all know it's true that the reason they're winning is because of Jonathan. He says, well, it's because we work so well as a team and because we're such a good group. Like, it's probably not as good for the group to say that and for them to be, you know, thrown under the bus a little bit in, like, how close they all are. But, like, the alternative to that is we're doing so well because of me, simply because of me. Yeah. Like, I'm that big a threat. Like, what else can you say? Like, I felt so bad for him through all of this.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was, like, thinking about it. Because I think a lot of people at home, I think this is one of the few episodes where I think over the last few years, like, everything that the host says, whether it's Jonathan, whether it's Jeff, Nico, whoever, like, whenever they talk to the contestants, you are listening because you know that they're talking with intent as well. And so, you know, when Jeff is sort of being like, Jonathan, you're basically single-handedly lifting all three tribe members over your shoulders and then leaping over everything, it's like, why is Jeff highlighting that? Because it's amazing. And so I can see the predicament he's in, because you can't control what Jeff says. You can't control what attention he gives you, because on his end, he's a producer and he wants to sort of highlight things that he finds interesting. But yeah, like you're saying, he can't be like, I hate these people, it's single-handedly me, or the alternative of it's all of us, because the reality is Jeff has already explicitly said that Jonathan has single-handedly saved, like, everyone from drowning, like, Chappie's it, like, you know. Because it reminds me of, like, when, you know, after I got voted out and then, you know, the Braun tribe sort of came in and they were all very, like, oh, like, all really disappointed, which was very nice to see because obviously I wasn't there and I didn't know that had happened. But it's because I was, like, one of the only people that they as a group knew, because Jonathan would ask me questions and I'd talk and I had the hat and all this sort of stuff. And so the strength of that sort of what you say on the mat and sort of how you communicate all that is so important. And I feel like it's an element that you don't really think about until you're there, only because when you watch it on screen, you're just kind of like, Jeff is just saying, like, making observations and asking you how you're going. But you really have to think about that stuff when you're there. And it just kind of sucks that Jonathan has to basically play against Jeff. Like, that's a bit of an annoying thing to have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, there's a spotlight for so many reasons. Like, they are killing the challenges. Like, I'm concerned for Taku in general. Like, I'm rooting for them as a tribe. And I think that not just Jonathan, like, they as a unit, I think will be too big a threat. I'm, like, concerned for Lindsay, especially if Jonathan's going to win some immunities. Like, she being his, like, female partner who often suffers for that. She having the amulet, so, like, this bounty on her early merge. I'm, like, now just thinking about how concerned I am for Lindsay. I think best case scenario, like, the other disaster tribes of Vati and Ika have just, like, no central basis and kind of need to cling to the only solid thing in the game, which is Taku. But I can also see maybe just, like, the chaos just kind of combines to take out, like, the only thing that, like, the one thing they don't have is just, like, unity. So it's like, let's just take that out. And then we're all on the same playing field of, like, kind of being this, like, broken up group. So I'm concerned for them. And for Jonathan particularly, like, I love that he's thinking about it. I'm a provider, I'm a shield, but, like, I feel in this 26-day game, both of those things are reduced in how necessary they are. Yeah, like,
absolutely.
How much you need a shield, well, there's, like, way fewer rounds where you need to be protected. Like, we have fire, we have, like, other things which can shield. We have advantages. Like, we don't need a human shield as much as we just have mechanisms of the game. As a provider, I feel like that disparity in the two halves of the game is maybe more stark than ever, because the beginning of the game is harder than usual for the US because you get less food, you need that provider. But later on, you know, you're at the final five and it's day 24 instead of day 37, like, you need that provider less. So I think that disparity is really stark and won't be super important to them. But then he has the outs of Modern Survivor, which is, like, he can make fire. He can, you know, he has fewer rounds to win immunity. Like, he needs to just basically, I think, rely on the game, because I don't think people will see what he can give to them in value as important. The way we've seen Shields be such an important part of like this big long Australian Survivor game, yes. I don't think that it will be as imperative in season 42 of US Survivor. So I think he has an uphill battle, but as we know, his dad used to make him and his brother run appeals really early in the morning. Was that not a horrifying story? Horrifying. Like, he seemed to think that it was like, that's what makes me what I am. I'm like, this is like, at best, like, comically horrifying, and possibly at worst, like, actually a little bit horrifying. Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah. That story was a hard one for me.
Oh, yeah, it was so funny, because this whole time I was thinking, he really looks like a Hemsworth. He looks like he could be Thor. Jonathan Hemsworth. Yeah, fully. And then they said in the episode, I was like, well, clearly you're thinking it too. But I was, like, realizing, like, we never have really had, in American Survivor, the huge guy, like, when I say huge guy, I don't mean like Joe Anglim, Challenge Beast, tall guy. I mean like physically huge guy. I can't like who will drag people in the challenges and stuff like that. Like the only person I could think of who ever got used in that capacity is Sean Hampson in terms of Australian Survivor. Like a physically giant guy who was the horse for all the challenges. And it's just really funny because Jonathan is in a season where I also think maybe the next sort of like muscliest guy might actually be Mike.
Yeah.
Like who's 60, is like 60 years old. Oh, wait, is he 60? He's almost 60?
Yeah, he's almost 60.
Yeah. So it's like the idea of him being a shield only makes sense when there's like
people
all
to
these.
Shield.
Yeah, people to be shielding, but when everybody else is on a very even playing field.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's like, he in his mind, he shouldn't be thinking, they're all going to target because I'm a shield. Well, the reality is you're the only shield, so maybe he have to start playing from that way, which is obviously, like, and you've highlighted it lots, he is playing very well socially. He is a very surprising character in terms of, like, I don't think we haven't had a white guy with dreads on Survivor yet. But he's very spiritual, he's very zen in a way that I think really offsets that sort of physical dominance. I don't think his personality comes across as arrogant, or he seems very genuine. And even like the fact that he said that story and he's like, oh, this basically had to like run uphill, blah blah
horrible.
Blah, my whole entire life, and he thought that was like a very wholesome, endearing story, which I'm sure it is to a lot of people. But
I don't know
if that wasn't your upbringing, you're like, whoa. And so I think, yeah, he's in a tough spot, but I think he could easily just get out of it by just playing what he's doing very well, I will say. Because, you know, the other three could easily just turn around and be like, you're the threat, you're our shield, we're going to get rid of you. But clearly they all see value in him being that highlighted figure beyond being a shield. Because he's going to take them to the merge, the four of them, so easily. And especially for Marianne, like, yeah, you want that advantage. I think at this point, Marianne should stop saying her... This is something I wrote down. Marianne should stop at this point saying her phrase, because they're never going to go to tribal. Her advantage turns into something once they hit the merge. They're not going to lose any challenges because the others now just are bleeding people. Like, at this point, don't even say a phrase. Just know that you're going to go to the merge with an advantage.
Yeah, well, last week we questioned whether those rules were clear to everyone, whether you know that you... it's an option and that you don't have to say it because it says you must say it. And we talked about like, and when she said, well, no one else has found the idol and didn't even seem to consider that people might've found it, but be choosing not to say
that made
me feel like the rules are not clear to her. And that made me mad. Like that's something I definitely want to hear from Marianne after the season. Like, did you think that that was an option? Cause if she didn't know, that actually infuriates me. Like I know that there's something to say about, well, she should have thought about it and like, you know, forgiveness, not permission. And like, but like some people just, you know, it's your first time playing, you want to keep to the rules. And when you say must, you're like, we're doing that. Like, I really think they should make it clear.
Yep.
And if she's making the choice, I agree. Like maybe stop saying it. But if she doesn't know that there's a choice to be made, I have a problem with that. I also was confused because last week, the bunny rabbit in the mailbox story was about like, not, you know, judging people till you walk a mile in their shoes. And now it was about shelter. It was like the phrase has no meaning, Marianne. Like I took something beautiful from this, and now it's about something completely different. Like what the hell's the point in the bunny in the mailbox?
which is just really funny because, like everyone was highlighting last week, she's already said so many ridiculous things in front of everybody unprompted already. So everybody just thinks she's just some eccentric person just, you know, saying things. But unfortunately, yeah, maybe because, like, that's why Mike's is so good of a phrase, because there's grace in soccer, whatever it is. It's like that is something you could just literally say, and you know, as I always say, there's always grace in soccer, and then you can just say
he also has to say it makes him cry. There's so much grace in the game of soccer, it makes me cry.
Yeah, like, you could easily say that just at the end of your sentence. Hers is like, it's like the tale of the rabbit in
hers is a story. Hers is like, settle in, because it's story time with Marianne. Yeah. And we're talking about the bunny rabbit. The bunny rabbit's adventures in the mailbox this week. Every week it's different. Next week it'll mean something else.
But also, like, at this point, the others know. So surely they are giving her segues. Like, they should be able to. Jonathan should be like,
Marianne doesn't need a segue. Marianne's taking her own segue.
She's got the go-getter attitude that Swathi should have had with the strategy. You know, Marianne definitely would have been doing all the things.
She doesn't wait. Yeah,
no, she's not waiting. No, she's not waiting.
Although even she was like, Jonathan, keep it cool. Like, be cool, Jonathan. Like, keep those emotions in check. You know, like, don't say everything you feel. Don't show it on your face. I was like, Marianne, like, people in glass houses should not throw stones at Marianne being upset that he was too demonstrative.
That was like when they came, it's like Jenny was voted out and she was like, ooh, it's like, did you, I guess he went on the walk with her, but like, I don't find those reactions really funny because it's based off very little. So it's like, they didn't know that it was a huge trouble. So her reaction was very fair. It was like, cool, but was she like, wow, they voted out Jenny? Oh, like, I really want, that's the thing I love about Marianne. It's just like, her brain works in a very emotionally, not in an emotional way. Like, she's not sad when she's sad, and she's not like dour or anything like that. It's like on a plane where everything's great. And I just want to know at what level she thought, wow, something amazing must have happened for Jenny to have got, like, it would be Marianne should just tell stories. Like, it's the world of Marianne. She's like, explain, like, I can't wait to ever talk to her, for her to explain her strategy, because I'm sure it's like a wonderful place. And it's like a different universe.
Yeah, well, they compete on who has the better facial reaction shots. That's for Chrissy and Marianne. I love Marianne so much, but I also think marketing opportunity. Don't you think she should write a children's book? Like the classic tale of the bunny rabbit in the mailbox? And she could write it, and then she could do like story time with Marianne. Like, this is a brilliant idea, and I think that she should do it.
She has mega child presenter teacher energy. Like, I can't remember exactly what she's studying. Child author. Yeah, that she should be. She should
be. Let's get her in touch with Wei. Let's do
this. Yeah, literally. I think there's a full opportunity here for Marianne to be doing, you know, she could be doing TikToks where she's reading stories. She could be writing a story, like 5-minute stories. Like, she could be doing, she just has that energy where it's just like,
Born to be a star.
Yeah, she's born to be a star, and it comes so naturally. It's consistent. It's pleasant. Like, I know, you know, people with a lot of energy aren't necessarily for everybody, but there's something about her. This is going back to what I was saying when you first asked me how I felt about the season. This season, everybody's energy is so elevated. It's so happy. It's like, roll with the punches. It's not negative. It's not down. Like, and Marianne carries a lot of that in the same way that Jonathan's carrying his tribe on his back. Marianne's carrying the energy of the season on her back. Like, I think she is uplifting this season to a level that I don't think we have seen for a very, maybe since David versus Goliath. Like, I think Christian had the same sort of energy, that sort of uplifting, like, your presence just makes everything, like, nicer. Like, it's
better.
Better.
I agree. Marianne's the best, and I don't want to live in a season where they send her home. So hopefully she just wins, because that bunny, that's going to be a story. This is a brilliant. Someone tell them that Marianne.
Yes.
She can take it for free. Actually, no, I want 10% cut. But then
Yeah, no.
But then she gets the rest. Great.
Yeah, yeah, literally. Just tag us in your TikTok.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the chizzy. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
All right. So I obviously am between Romeo and Drea for the 3 and 2.
Yes.
I'm going to give 3 points to Romeo. I just feel like he's at the top of the hierarchy. Like, from what we've seen on the show, we haven't even seen his name, and everyone else has been at least, like, Drea had missteps that she made up for, but he feels like he's really just been kind of doing everything right in this tribe. I feel like he made the right choice with Wathi for all the reasons that we've been saying. I feel like he drove it in action too. And then I just feel that, for both of them to really take the power that they have, for them to even suggest the extra vote and then for them to read not to use it. So much really good strategy going on for the two of them. The reason I would seem to give 3 to Drea was just actually when Swathi's ex-interview with Rob, she said that Oxroy was a bit against Romeo. So I feel like I had been thinking through my analysis of the week that possibly Romeo had kept Roxroy close, and maybe it wasn't just like the internal issues with Tori, maybe that relationship, which I thought this whole time, like, I know that we see Romeo having his own issues, but at least like he plays it well. I thought that it like came across at least to Roxroy is really tight, but if he's wanted to go against Romeo, then maybe Romeo hasn't been keeping him in it as much, and then maybe Drea really receiving that loyalty really, really well, like maybe that did well. But I still think from what we've seen on the screen, like, Romeo seems to be doing the best of that tribe, but Drea had a great week, covered for a lot of mistakes of the past, took out Swathi, who was particularly coming for her. She keeps her extra vote. She vocalizes some really smart instincts and strategies. And I feel like she and Romeo have just really consolidated as a pair and a running thing. So I'll give her 2 points there. Just maybe for more missteps of the past that she had to kind of answer for and cover for, which she 100% did. But at least, you know, Romeo kind of has been and seems going really well the whole time. And then I'll give 1 point to Hai, who I thought came back really, really well. Formed a great bond with Mike. I feel like the way that he vocalized his instincts from last week made me even higher, excuse the pun, on just like how well he did last week. Like, to be so central on his tribe, but just like basically 20 minutes of content from the end of last week to this week. Just the way he was talking about his instincts. I love the way he vocalized that everyone was blindsided. That was such a simple way to explain why that vote was so fun and chaotic. And even like a lot of the strategies that we were giving last week, like, oh, make them vote for Mike, or, you know, obviously the split which they go with, and like even we said, like, maybe get like Lydia to play a shot in the dark, and I was thinking like actually better to get Hai to play shot in the dark because Lydia's might hit Hai. It obviously won't, and they still would have the numerical advantage. You can't hit because he's not the target, so it won't matter if his shot in the dark works. But even then, like, it feels like none of those things would have worked just purely due to his great instincts and the way he's talking to Mike about it, and that made it very, very difficult for Daniel and Chanel. Like, that made more than ever that they really should have gone with Hai and Lydia because they came up against such a force in Hai. We'll give them a point. And honorable mention to Mike, who obviously, you know, against easy competition in Daniel and Chanel, does, like, win that battle like, consolidating with Hai and Lydia. But, yeah, I love that relationship. He receives it really well from Hai as well, and Hai forever. So he probably deserves a point that I didn't have to give. So that's my points.
Okay. Oh, God. I was like, oh, God, I don't want to mirror. I don't want to mirror yours.
100%
can, no, no. Well, I might, maybe I was thinking, so you had Romeo as 3 and Drea as 2, right?
Yeah.
Because I was like thinking as you were explaining them, I think I'll give Drea 3.
I like that. I like that that means that they both tie the cheesy because that feels right.
Yeah. Like, because I guess in the same reasons why you would put Drea down, I think I would put her up just because,
as we've now spoken,
she did more. And the mere fact that now that first episode, she loaded up on those advantages, and that now she, with the advantages, is in a clear position to come out of this tribe with them intact, with a solid alliance member. And that's, and I just can't get over, like I was saying before, like her demeanor, the way she's very cool, calm. People do come up to her, they do talk in that way. I very much appreciate that from her perspective, to be able to sort of navigate through all of that, especially because the reason why Zach went home was because, you know, Tori and Drea and blah, 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 all this sort of stuff. So she was already in a position where there was a bit of highlighting on her. It wasn't like Swathi, who was like not really in the spotlight, and then she threw herself into the spotlight. it's really nice that, you know, Drea's been able to slowly and surely sort of go back. And then obviously too for Romeo for being, you know, then that other person, like they are such a good duo from what we see. They both are able to navigate sort of these scenarios fine, but Romeo clearly sort of had a lot of those social ins at the beginning and has been able to just optimize a lot of that as he's gone along. But but unfortunately, he just doesn't have the advantages and all that sort of stuff. But I think, you know, it's like a Tony and Trish, you know, you have somebody who's going off, running off, finding all the idols, blah, blah, blah. And then you have the person who's sort of like putting out all the fires, as she referred to it as herself. So I kind of like that little duo. And then for one, I was also going to say hi for the same reasons that you were saying. So to be able to come out of that crazy tribal, then become a new majority and probably a more solid majority, I very much think that that was his reads the previous episode were great, but then also his reads this episode were great. So I very much appreciate that. And like I was saying, if he's intentionally aligning with Mike, knowing that, you know, they're loading up on advantages, like unfortunately, Mike has sort of gone down his own pecking order, I guess. So now he's on the bottom of a three person alliance instead of being in a duo. So I wouldn't necessarily put him above High. But I do sort of like what High has done in sort of nurturing these relationships and bringing this very unified group of three together. And I hope they get to stick together, because I really like that group and I really like High. I don't know. So, yeah, so unfortunately I had very similar points to you.
It's clear.
It was because I was like, maybe I should give one to Jonathan for just like.
Through the difficulties of Jeff, managing Jeff, as best as he could. But
in clear sort of progression of their own sort of strategy aside from Jeff, I'll give one.
Yeah, I mean, for Mike, there's good stuff there, because I feel like it's for High and Mike, both of them, like they've made like a good long-term relationship that will see them merge and hopefully be like something that can help them like through like the next phases of the game. And Mike also puts himself in a position where he does need to say the phrase, which has been his strategy the whole time, because he's now in a majority again. So he doesn't need his vote. He's not going to need the idol. Like he's assured himself that through the pre-merge, which, you know, lets him do what he wanted with that. So a lot of good stuff there, but it means the chance. Romeo is now leading on 9.
Oh my God.
Now, High and Drea are both coming second on 8. Omar and Jonathan are on 5. And then we've got a bunch of people a few points below that. Tori's on 2. Daniel's on 2. Mike's on 2. Lindsay's on 2. Jenny and Swathi both left on 2. And Marianne is on 1. So those are the points. I'll ask a question from the listener. Sean Bryan asks you, Phil, if Shot in the Dark existed in your tribal, would you have played it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw that. Like, you didn't see, but me and Haley knew that we were the only two people getting votes. And
we might have had 2 Shot in the Darks played.
Which would have been crazy, because, like, I still would have gone home, but it would have been weird if, you know, I played it and then I was safe and Haley played it and she wasn't safe and Haley went home and we'd have a different season and weird alternate. But
you'd be
of
the
course.
Winner.
Yeah, literally. Oh, God. No, I would have had such an uphill battle after that tribal. But, I knew it was me or Haley, and we both spoke as such, and yeah, so of course.
If only you'd had the opportunity, although no Shot in the Dark has hit yet. It's gonna happen. No. Like,
oh God.
If everyone plays it pretty much every week, it will happen at a point. So we're gonna see it.
The funny thing is, when Jeff sort of undoes the scroll, it's sort of like a non-event. He's like, okay, I'm gonna open the scroll. You are not safe or whatever, and it's like, oh, but you just know that when it is going to happen, it's going to be like, zoom in on like 5 minutes, slow zoom, real slow. Going to zoom in on
ad break.
And it's like, you're safe. It's like,
fireworks. What's going on over there? Like the other tribes are just looking and it's just like fireworks.
They just cut to Marianne's face. She's not even there. She's just pulling her face. They just cut to her looking surprised. It's like, what?
All I ask is that when Shot in the Dark hits, Marianne is at that tribal council. I just want her reaction. I just need her to be part of it.
I can already see it. She's like, what? Like, I just pulled a face as if anyone can see what I was just doing, but we know what Marianne would be doing. yeah.
Definitely. Well, Phil, where can people find you on social media? As I was saying, like, Twitter's for Survivor, Instagram's for amazing crochet creations that everyone needs to check out, that they should buy and that we're not getting for free.
So, yeah, follow me, like, definitely follow me on Twitter, because I feel like that's the only place I talk about Survivor. So that, I think that's at the Chilly Philly. And then, yeah, if you want to follow me on Instagram, that's just normal Chilly Philly. C-H-I-L-I-P-H-I-L-L-Y.
Normal Chilly Philly. I love this. It's like, it's different, yeah, there's normal and there's not normal Chilly Philly. Well, a lot going on for me. Australian Survivor is ending next week, coming to the end of that journey. I talked about the penultimate week with Ricard from season 41, and then the finale I would talk about, as always, with Nick and Mike. Talking tribal every week, of course, all the exits. I've got that ready to go for next week, so we should be getting every single exit interview. Got them last week, and we should be getting them all through finale week, and we've had that all through pretty much since week four. We've had every exit interview, so very grateful for that. Next week there will be no Survivor Global, because I will be on the feedback show with Rob, so I will still be talking about it, still be giving out chizzy points, but it's gonna be on the main feed with Rob, so don't be coming like, oh well, where was Global? Like, I'm podcasting but with Rob, so I'm excited for that. Memo, as always, I've been plugging that, which has been a fun time. The articles on template that I've been doing around Australian Survivor and US Survivor. Follow me at Shannon Gates for all of that on Instagram and on Twitter, and subscribe to the International Survivor Happens feed for all the content except the feedback show, which will again be on the main feed. Wanted to shout out Crime Scene as well, which is the new true crime podcast with Mari and Sarah Carradine on reality TV Rehab Up. So a lot going on across the whole network. But Phil, thank you so much. I feel like we dove into it. It was a fun strategic episode. I'm glad I got to talk about it with you.
Yeah, no. We actually spoke quite a bit, so I'm very glad.
You seem surprised. Like, have you met me?
Oh yeah, I know. As we were just talking, I was like, oh, it's just like you're here.
It's good to catch up now that I've left and we can't do our viewing parties. Now that I'm in Sydney, but like, it's good to still talk about the episode.
Yeah, no, I do miss sort of having viewing parties and having everyone over. So it's been nice to be able to connect in this way.
Yeah, it's been a fun time. So thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will see you next week with Rob on the feedback show. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
1 million pounds.
Million
euro.
Million.
Shkeli.
Tribe spoke.
Shiva talk with
Ship.
Tribe spoke.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.
Adventure of a lifetime.